All right, you may be seated. Just have to get my stopwatch here because those of you who know me well know that sometimes I have a habit of losing track of time. God has just blessed me with so much that I desire to say that cutting down on that just feels just so wrong to me. And I say, well, no, Lord, I have all of this to say. I don't care that Todd usually speaks for 25 minutes, you know. I want to just go on and on. But I have tried, and I have practiced, and I have rehearsed. And as usual, forgive me if I tend to go a little long here. But we will we'll do what we can, and hopefully you'll get something from this. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Matt Furrow. I spent the first 24, 25-ish years of my life growing up in this church, and I had recently, a couple years ago, moved up to Holland in order to try to pursue what I felt like God was calling me to do with ministry. But for those of you who don't know, I do have something pretty new and pretty exciting in my life, and that is that as of about 2 months ago, I am a married man. So it's, yes, thank you. So far, so good. I'm enjoying it. It's been a blessing to me, and hopefully I never lose this mindset. And so whenever I run into a lot of people who know me well, and they know this, the question that usually comes up is something along the lines of, oh, you know, how's married life? And I'm like, it's great. And that's usually all I can say because it's not bad. But sometimes I struggle to answer that because I feel like everything is supposed to be different now. Like it's supposed to be just this completely different worldview and I'm supposed to see things in a different way. But no, I'm still me. I'm just committed to someone now and I'm sharing a living space and a sleeping space with them. And I have to bring them along with me wherever I go as well, which sometimes is good and sometimes takes some getting used to after spending, you know, so much of my life by myself. But I love it and I enjoy it. One of the biggest things, though, to be honest here, that I've struggled to get used to with married life is wearing a wedding ring. And I don't know if it's just a me thing or if it's, you know, any guys out there who are married, if you had to go through this, I just, for some reason, I struggle to wear it. And I'm going to be completely honest with you, I'm not wearing it right now. I came down from Holland, and I got up and got ready. And, you know, I take my ring off at night, and I put it on first thing in the morning. But some days I have other things on my mind, and I was about 20 minutes down the road driving, and I just noticed, and I just thought, oh, great, you know. But thankfully, God has a sense of humor, and that, you know, that ties in wonderfully to what I'm speaking about today. And my wife is loving and forgiving and realizes that it was not an intentional act that I left it behind. And nothing is wrong with the ring itself. You know, I picked it out. I enjoy the design. It was relatively budget-friendly. But it's just not something that I am used to wearing. So at times it almost feels like an extra burden to me. And that seems so silly because it's not a burden. Burden is probably too strong of a word. I probably should have rehearsed this a little more. I'm just digging myself in. And it's just, it's funny because it's also something that I do value to the point where for the second half of this summer, my wife and I were working at a Camp Beach Point up in Allegan. They had some needs, and so they hired us on for the second half of their summer season. And one of the first things I said to my wife as we were getting ready to head out is I said, hey, just so you know, when I get up in the morning, and thankfully the camp provided us a nice trailer to stay in, I said, when I wake up in the morning, I'm probably just going to leave my wedding ring by the bedstand and just go out the whole day without it. I said, because to be honest, this is a really large place, a lot of woods and water and all this stuff, and I'm afraid of losing it because I tend to take it off and fidget with it and play with it half the time. I can't keep it on. I said, so if that's okay with you, you know, so I don't lose it, I'm just going to leave it here. And when I get back at night, I'll put it on for a bit when I know I'm safe and in the confines of my trailer. Unfortunately, that didn't go over as well as I had hoped it would. And I was told that was not really an option. And not that I blame her for thinking that way. It's just the way I'm thinking of it right now. I view it as just this sort of little piece of metal that was crafted into a ring shape. And to me, the ring itself doesn't make or break our marriage. In my mind, I know that I'm married. In my heart, I know that I'm committed. You know, I stood up here and recited the vows that Todd told me to. And the state of Michigan recognizes it as well, I believe. And so I'm like, all of those things are set. So to me, that little ring doesn't add a ton. But to my wife, it is much more than just this simple piece of metal that I tend to view it as. For her, it's symbolic of our love and our commitment to each other, and she sees that every day, and that's a reminder to her of the promises I have made to her. And not only to her, it's a sign for others to see as well. When they look at it, they're reminded of that, and they know that, and they know that I'm married, and they know that I've made that commitment. And so even though for me, I can just think, yeah, well, in my head, I know this, for my wife and for others, it is a much bigger deal. And God actually tends to operate the same way. He desires us to remember his love, his faithfulness, his commitment to us. And a lot of times, we tend to take the same approach I take towards my wedding ring, which is, well, yeah, God, naturally, I know it. I've got that sort of tucked away in my brain. You know, I'll acknowledge it every now and then. You know, I know we're good. But God actually wants more from us. Similar to the ring, God wants us to have these symbols, these daily reminders of his love, his commitment to us. He doesn't want us just to sort of catalog it in the back of our heads and say, yeah, God, I know we're cool. You know, I know you love me. I know Jesus died for me. God wants us to be in daily remembrance of that. And so we're going to take a look at some scripture today that tends to focus on some of this. So we're going to start in Joshua chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. It's found on page 170 in your pew Bible. And I apologize that I do not have any screen notes up there. Todd texted me 2 weeks ago, right as he was leaving for vacation, and said, do you have anything ready yet? And I said, well, no, I've got 2 weeks still till I have to preach. He said, well, then you're not going to have notes because everyone else is going to be on vacation as well, which is fine. We'll do it the old-fashioned way. So open up to page 170 in your pew Bibles. Should be Joshua chapter 4. We're looking at verses 1 through 7 to start out. And before I read through this, I just want to give a little bit of background, a little bit of context. That's how my brain works. I like the situation to be set out, and maybe that matters for you, maybe it doesn't, but I'm the one speaking right now, so we're going to go with that. So just to preface this, where we are in the history of the Hebrew people, they had been freed from slavery. Moses had freed them, and God had worked through him, you know, to bring all the plagues upon the Pharaoh and the country of Egypt. And then they made their way basically to the promised land, to this place that God had specifically set aside for them. He said, this is your home. I have given this land to you. And some different things happened, and the first group of people, the first generation, so to speak, ended up wandering around the desert for a while. And so where we pick up now, we have the second generation that of this original group of Israelites that had been freed from Egypt, and they're ready to step into the promised land. They're ready to take hold of what God has given to them, except there is one major obstacle in the way, and that was the Jordan River. It was sort of the boundary line, the border line of where they were to enter, and there weren't really any bridges across, and to go around it would have been taken a very long time and was just not necessary. And this is what God wanted them to do. God said, you need to have faith in me. I need you to get across this river to step into the promised land. And the people weren't really very water friendly. Keep in mind, they had been wandering the desert for 40 years at this point. They weren't sailors, they weren't fishermen. They didn't have a lot of familiarity with large bodies of water. So for them, the thought of crossing over it was terrifying. They probably didn't even know how to swim well. But this is where they had faith in God. And as they sort of stepped out into the river, God dried it up and allowed them safe passage across. And this is where we pick up, because as they're crossing the river, God has something specific in mind for them. So Joshua chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests stood, and to carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you stay tonight. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the river were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. And so what's happening is it's not just, a small group of people. This is an entire generation, a whole nation, so to speak, hundreds upon hundreds of Israelites crossing over the river that God had dried up. And in the middle of this, God says, oh, hey, by the way, Joshua, who was the leader at this time, he said, I need you to do something real quick for me. I need you to choose 12 people and have them double back, go back to the riverbed, which was dried up at this point temporarily, and pick up 12 stones from the riverbed and place them on the land where you camp tonight. He said, I want those stones to be a memorial, to be a reminder of what I did here. And this is a really unique situation because think about it. Think about all the people of Israel had been through up to this point. We'll just start with the slavery. They had been enslaved in Egypt. God had freed them through Moses. They were in the desert for 40 years, yes, but God provided for them in miraculous ways through that. He gave them, pillar of cloud by day, pillar of fire at night. He provided manna for them to eat, and when they got sick of that, he provided an abundance of quail. And so here they are about to enter the promised land, and God does another miracle, and he dries up the river temporarily so they can cross. And God says, no, this is the moment you need to remember. Because God knows. He knows how we work as humans. He knows that we are kind of forgetful. And he knows that once the people cross into the promised land and start to take hold of what he has given to them, they're going to settle and they're going to grow, but they're going to become complacent. They're going to forget the journey they were on. They're going to forget all that God had provided for them to get them to this point. And he says, no. That is not what I want you to do. We need to remember this. You need to remember what I did for you so that you can know it, so that you can pass this on to your children and they can pass it on. This memorial will stay here. And this wasn't something that was thought of Joshua. It was God ordained, right? God brought the idea to them, which is even more important. Because how many times do we tend to take credit for things that maybe God has done in our lives? And I'm sure Joshua was a great man. He was faithful to the Lord. But God knows, he said, knows this has to originate from me. If you get a promotion at work, or your child is maybe a star athlete, or they're on the honor roll, or whatever it may be for you, you experience unprecedented success in your life, blessing, a lot of times we'll get carried away with it and we'll say, yeah, look what I did. And we might give a shout out to God, sure. We might thank him for it, but ultimately, we're not going to remember that that was from God. And so God is saying, I have brought you to this point. I have brought you to the promised land. You do not get to take credit for that. That is me. I brought you along the whole way. You need to make a reminder for yourself so that you don't forget my faithfulness and my love to you. Because once we forget what God has provided for us, that is when we start to struggle. We become frustrated that things aren't going our way. We become bitter. We become sad. We become angry. Whatever emotion you want to throw out there, we've all experienced it, where things aren't going the way we desire in our lives, and we forget that God has just brought us on an incredible journey and that we are only where we are right now because of him. And I'll admit, personally, I struggle with this as well, all the time. I just completed a 2-year, basically, residency program at a church up in Holland that I thought was going to be my gateway into full-time ministry. So far, it has not worked out that way. I did everything I could, and the church really liked me, and they just said, I'm sorry, we don't have money to hire you on. And I said, oh, okay. And so I've been applying for jobs at different churches, trying to utilize my experience, but nothing has come my way yet. And I've been struggling recently with that, with saying, God, where are you? Why aren't you providing for me? Don't you want me to serve you? Don't you want me to work in your church and to have a job in ministry like I desire right now? And while I'm sure God does desire that, that's not the point. The point is I'm forgetting that he has brought me to this point. He has given me tons of experience. He saw me through the past 2 years where half of my salary had to be fundraised, which is something I never thought I was capable of because I don't enjoy asking people for money. He gave me housing in a city where Holland is a nice city, but they're experiencing a housing shortage right now, a major affordable housing shortage. He gave me housing. He gave me community. He gave me steady work for 2 years that paid the bills and allowed me to buy, you know, an engagement ring for my now wife and gave me that stability to get married. But I forget all of that. I forget how God provided for me on that journey, and I just focus on the immediate right now and say, no, God, I'm not happy right now with where I'm at. And so that's why God has the people of Israel make this monument once they cross the Jordan River, because he says, listen, I know you. I know your hearts. And I don't want you to forget how I was with you on the journey, how I provided for you all of this time. And that's not only to serve as a reminder, you know, but it's also something to celebrate. Are we celebrating what God has done for us? Are we celebrating all the victories we've had in our life because of God? We as a people, especially as Americans, but as humans, we tend to say, all right, God, you got me through this hurdle. What's next? I'm going to start looking ahead. What's next down the road, right? And we don't take time to stop and say, holy cow, God just provided for me in a major way. I'm going to take time, stop, and acknowledge and celebrate that. Celebrating can very well be a spiritual thing to do, a spiritual discipline that oftentimes we lack and we kind of forget about. And so God wants us to remember and to celebrate what he has done for us. And we do this with our own history as a nation, right? As America, as our American identity, we have monuments all over the country that celebrate the history we have. The figures and the events that happened that has shaped our identity as America. You know, statues and sculptures everywhere that elicit strong feelings about our past. Sometimes positive, sometimes negative. We saw this the other weekend down in Virginia. What happened when one statue was going to be taken down? People from all over came out because that one statue had so many feelings and emotions and connections tied to it. People said, no, this is our identity as America. Some of them had negative opinions saying that doesn't represent us. Some of us had positive opinions saying, yes, you cannot take that down. But we see what happens. You know, we've seen what happens in our own country with these monuments and statues that we have built and how tied we are to them and the feelings they elicit. And it doesn't stop with our cultural history. Look at what businesses do nowadays in our modern times. Businesses will set up their own monuments, right? Which tend to be maybe a fancy sign or a slogan or whatever so that you notice them and it catches your attention. Think about McDonald's, for example. We have the golden arches, right? No matter where you are around the world, when you see those golden arches, you know immediately what that means and what that represents. And that elicits feelings in you about McDonald's, maybe positive, maybe negative. I'm not here to bash on them. But you understand that, right? McDonald's has their own monument, their own thing that they know people will recognize immediately and understand. Where are we doing that with our faith? Where are God's monuments in our lives? And I'm not talking about physical statues, you know, around everywhere. It's more personal than that. What in your life do you have set up where the second you see it, it will elicit those feelings and those remembrances of, yes, God has done this for me? We're going to fast forward our story a little bit here. We're gonna go 350 years later in the history of this Israelite community, and we're going to focus on a second story now. This is going to be 1 Samuel chapter 7, verses 3 through 12. You can find that on page 218 in your pew Bible. Page 218. 1 Samuel chapter 7, verses 3 through 12. Page 218. So we're 350 years later now, after the Israelite people have entered into the promised land, right? And so they have flourished. They're their own nation now. They have borders, roughly, you know. They're recognized by others as an entity. They have grown, they have flourished. And while they don't have set kings or rulers yet, they had spiritual figureheads at this time who are sort of in charge of implementing God's rules and desires for the people. And so where we are in their history, we have a guy named Samuel, which is why the book is named what it is, named after him, a guy named Samuel who was a prophet, but who was also sort of looked up to as this spiritual figurehead in the country. And once he comes into the scene, he realizes that God's people have grown a little complacent. They have forgotten a lot of the great things he has done for them, so much so that they've started worshiping false idols and fake gods and sort of rested on themselves to get ahead in life. And so he's not going to stand for it. So Samuel goes around and just starts calling people out and says, "What you're doing is wrong. You need to turn back to God." And he just sort of goes on a whole almost revival tour of Israel, calling people out and telling them they need to do better. And guess what? It worked. It actually worked. And so what happens is that the leaders of all the tribes gathered together to pray and fast and confess before God, along with Samuel, and to say, "God, we messed up. We need you again in our lives." And something interesting happened. I'm going to pick up in verse 7 here. Again, we're on page 218, 1 Samuel. I'm going to pick up in verse 7 of chapter 7. "When the Philistines heard that Israel had assembled, the rulers of the Philistines came up to attack them. When the Israelites heard of it, they were afraid because of the Philistines. They said to Samuel, 'Do not stop crying out for the Lord our God for us, that he may rescue us from the hand of the Philistines.' So Samuel cried out to the Lord on Israel's behalf, and the Lord answered him. While Samuel was sacrificing the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to engage Israel in battle. But that day the Lord thundered with loud thunder against the Philistines and threw them into such a panic that they were routed before the Israelites. Then Samuel took a stone and set it up. he named it Ebenezer, saying, "Thus far the Lord has helped us." So we have another example here where the people of Israel were in a real predicament, right? They had gathered to acknowledge their wrongdoings before God, and what happens? Well, an enemy nation takes note of all the leaders gathering one place and says, "This can't go well. We need to attack them now while their guard is down." And they have no choice but to rely upon God at this point in time. And what happens? God comes through. God says, "Yes, I am here for you. I will deliver for you. I will provide for you." And at this point, Samuel, he doesn't need a reminder from God. He knows exactly what to do. And as soon as victory had been had, he sets up a stone, another monument, and he even gives it a specific name, Ebenezer, which basically means stone of help, so that all the people could acknowledge and remember, yes, this is the spot, this is the place where God helped us, where he came through for us in a situation where we needed him most. He sets up that monument so that he doesn't forget, so that the people of Israel do not forget. And what I find most fascinating about this story is what Samuel says as he sets up this Ebenezer stone. Right? What does he say? He says, my translation says, "Thus far, the Lord has helped us." And that's really interesting language. Let's stop for a minute and think about this. Samuel doesn't say, "Yeah, God gave us victory, you know, power and glory to him forever. Nothing can stop us." Samuel's humble. He says, "Thus far, so far, God has helped us." He's acknowledging what God has done to get them to this point. And then the rest is going to be faith. That's what faith is, right? That is what our faith is about. We acknowledge what has been done in the past, that Christ died on the cross to forgive us of our sins. But we have faith, we have hope in the things yet to come that have not happened yet. And that's where Samuel's at. He's saying, "God, I know you helped me this far, and I'm going to set up this monument to acknowledge this great day. But I'm going to have faith in the future because I don't know what's coming." As I was looking into this and this idea of people in the Old Testament setting up monuments, right? These stones, like we see Samuel doing, Ebenezer, the stone of help. I came across just this really interesting fact, and it's just kind of a language thing where in all of these situations, and this happens a couple different times throughout the Old Testament if you read it, people will set up these stones as monuments. It's always a stone and never a rock. They don't use the word rock. Well, he set up some rocks, and that was the monument. And so that got me thinking about the difference between a stone and a rock. And it's just kind of this rabbit trail my brain goes on because I like to know these things. And I didn't think it was going to end up anywhere relevant or important to this sermon. And I started reading definitions and the definition of a stone versus definition of a rock. And both words are used in each other's definitions, which doesn't help at all when you're trying to define the difference between the two. But then I found one actually really interesting definition that a geologist came up with. And I'm not a geologist. I know very little about geology, about our earth, the soil, the rocks, any of that. So please don't take me as an expert. I'm quoting some guy from the internet, which could, in a lot of cases, go very wrong. But in this instance, I think God brought me to it. And it actually works really well. So what this geologist had to say was basically, you know, rocks are what they are, which is, you know, dirt and sand and all of that that's been compressed over time, and it forms a rock. I think that's how it works. I'm not 100% confident here. But you get the idea. But a stone, then, the difference between a stone and a rock, a stone, he says, is a rock that has been handled by humans and therefore has a purpose, right? So it's the same structure, it's the same thing, but it's been given a purpose, and so we give it a new name. It takes on a new meaning. And that's that's similar to, it made me think about my wedding ring, right? I think of my wedding ring as just this piece of metal, as nothing important. But when we take that piece of metal and form it into a ring shape, we're giving it purpose. We're giving it a definition. We're giving it meaning. We're attaching emotions and tradition and value to it, despite the fact that it's just a piece of metal. But this is something that God actually wants us to think about. Right? Because what we see from these monuments, from Joshua, from Samuel, they're taking something ordinary, a rock, essentially, and they're giving it purpose. And so it becomes this monument, this thing that our feelings and emotions and history are attached to. And we can do the same thing, right? We don't need to go out and build a statue in order to acknowledge that thus far, God has helped us in our lives. We can take anything you want. It can be, you know, a flower garden. It can be, I think I read online when I was looking at an example, someone has used a bottle of syrup. But people take these ordinary things and they give it purpose, they give it meaning. And to them, then, it's no longer that ordinary thing, it's no longer just a rock. It is something that reminds them of God and God's grace to them, his blessing on them. So they have that daily reminder in our lives. It becomes their own monument. And God wants us to do that. We need to have those set up in our lives where we remember and we acknowledge. We have those daily reminders, not just on Sunday morning, but every day where we, whatever our routine is, we have this thing in our lives, like my wedding ring, where I see it and I'm reminded of the fact that I'm committed to my wife, that I'm in a loving relationship with her until the day that I die, and I'm going to encourage and support her. What are those monuments that we have in our lives, in our personal lives, that can remind us of God's assurance and his blessings to us? We've gotten away from that habit, and it's become about the church. Well, the church itself is a monument. Well, that's great, but we're not at the church every day. We don't drive by the church every day. The church is not inside of our homes, around our children, around our family, around our friends. What are those things that you can put in your life where when you see it, you'll be reminded, and you can give that reminder, you can pass it along to others and tell them the story about how thus far God has helped you in your life. And so let's walk down the ladder of abstraction and make this a little more practical here. So just a couple easy-to-do tips that I thought of to help us all with this. First of all, this is the first thing is to start a prayer journal. And this is something that Todd has always encouraged me to do. And to be honest, I struggle with this. But you essentially, you have a journal, and daily or weekly or whatever, you're writing down some of your prayer requests, some of your thoughts, so sort of a faith check of where you are. And you're just writing about how you feel in your faith, in your life, the things you're praying about. And what happens is that as you fill this up, you know, maybe 6 months to a year down the road, you can look back in it and say, oh, I remember last year, I was at this spot in my life. I was praying about this. I was concerned about this. God has helped me with that. That is not a thing I'm struggling with anymore. And you can acknowledge that and celebrate that instead of just having it be, all right, God help me, on to the next prayer request, on to the next goal. So the prayer journal not only helps you record where you're at currently in your faith, but you can then look back and see how over time God has helped you. You can have daily conversations with your friends or family, maybe around a meal, around the dinner table. Just ask the question, where did we see God today? Where did we see God at work today? And if thinking of that on a daily basis is too hard, then do that maybe once a week. Think back and say, where did we see God at work, in action, in our lives, or in someone else's life last week? Because what you're doing then is you're training yourself to acknowledge those moments, to remember them, to hold them close to you. And then, like I said earlier, acknowledging only goes so far. Celebrate it then. Have people over for dinner. Do something fun. The reason is because you're celebrating how God has done something incredible in your life. You've remembered it. You've acknowledged it. You've gotten your brain trained to think that way. Now celebrate it. Have fun with that. Thank God tremendously, even if it's just a small, simple prayer request. Train yourself to celebrate the good work God has done for you. And then figure out what monument you can put up in your life that is a daily reminder to you of the fact that thus far, God has been with you, he has seen you, and he has helped you in your life so that you don't forget, so that you don't become complacent. What simple, easy thing can you do to help remind yourself that God has been with you thus far and will continue to be with you?